listening to TBR Radio, brought to you by the Barnes Review. Now, the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show with your host, Andrew Carrington Hitchcock.
Hello, everybody. And we're going to focus on a very interesting topic today. The show is called The Frankfurt School and Cultural Marxism, and I have an expert with me on that subject, or those subjects, and he's a regular on this show. Very pleased to have him on. But before I bring my guest up, I sent this article that I saw on beforeitsnews.com, and the headline was Fake Nielgate Executed to Incite Civil War, Soros Using Celebrity Athletes to Launch Purple Revolution. And essentially it talks about things like perps and what have you, as Dr. Eric Karlstrom, my guest today, is well aware of, with the gang stalking, etc. And what the article basically goes through is the whole idea behind this is to essentially launch the communist revolution by saying that these black athletes are, you know, entitled to kneel for the national anthem. They shouldn't stand for it because the national anthem represents slavery and all that. And of course, it just goes down to the fact that these powers that be have promoted all this immigration because they know these different races struggle to amalgamate. And so once they get them here, then they incite division between the different races, and that in itself is a form of gang stalking. So that's pretty much what I got from this article. And so without further ado, I want to bring Eric up right now. Eric, are you with me?
Yes, I am. Good morning, Andy. Good to be with you again. At least it's morning over on my side of the Atlantic Ocean.
Absolutely. So, what time is it your side?
7 o'clock in the morning, bright and early.
Wow, yeah, gosh, you get up early, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon here, which is, I generally record my shows at 2 p.m. UK time, because, you know, when the show, I finish recording, I have to upload the show that gets broadcast today, because people do wait for it. And some people I know who are in your time zone, they literally get up and download it and they play it on their way to work and different things like that. So it's nice for them that they don't have to listen to the rubbish on the commercial radio they otherwise would have to. You're an expert in these subjects. You're an expert in so many fields. And of course, we've essentially got two things here. We've got the Frankfurt School and cultural Marxism. So let's first go through. Can you tell the listeners, imagine you're talking to someone that's never even heard the name the Frankfurt School. Can you go through the background to this, what they, you know, just the background, because of course what they're up to is cultural Marxism. So we'll tackle the Frankfurt School first. So over to you, Eric.
Yeah, well, when I graduated from being a professor in 2011, Andy, I spent 30 years teaching geography at three universities in America. And before I left teaching, I was teaching physical geography, climate, landforms, soils, that sort of thing, human ecology. And of course, human ecology is a vast field. So that got, you know, that was the door that opened me that I could kind of go through to get into all these interesting subjects like terrorism and war and geopolitics and how the economic system works and things like that. So, yeah, geographers tend to be generalists anyway. But I've especially been a generalist, especially since I retired. I've basically taken my research skills and applied them to topics that I find very interesting and very important. And one big project, in fact, the first big one that I took on after I left teaching in 2011, when I moved to my little idyllic Crestone Baca community of 1,500 in the southern part of Colorado, I wrote a long series of articles posted on my 911nwo.com website. By the way, my other websites are naturalclimatechange.org and gangstalkingmindcontrol.com and San Luis Valley Waterwatch.com and ericcarlstrom.com.
Sorry to jump in. I think it's gangstalkingmindcontrolcults.com, but I include links to all of these websites in the post for the show. Please continue.
Yeah. So anyway, I wrote this series is Crestone Baca, where I live, the Vatican City of the New World Order, an expose of the New World Religion. Well, because this is an interfaith community with lots and lots of different spiritual groups, and it's very associated with the UN. So I started to research these topics. And my part five, which is on my 9/11 NWO.com website, under New World Religion ? Is entitled, and it follows part four, which is the controllers, which I identify the people that really pull the strings in our society and in our world, have for a long time. We can talk about that. And part five is how the controllers control us, the co-option and corruption of culture and institutions. Okay, so, you know, and in this particular article, which is rather long, I go into the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations, which came out of the Psychological Warfare Division of the British Army right after World War I. And I get into the Frankfurt School, which is a Marxist think tank comprised of Jews that started in 1923. And let me just, if you don't mind, I'll just read a little bit here about this. Let's see if I can find my spot here. Yeah. Okay. What was the Frankfurt School? And this course started in Frankfurt, Germany. Well, in the days following the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, it was believed by the controllers that the workers' revolution would sweep into Europe and eventually into the United States, but it did not do so. Towards the end of 1922, the Communist International, Comintern, began to consider what were the reasons. On Lenin's initiative, a meeting was organized at the Marx-Engels Institute in Moscow. Okay, so we're talking now about the communists, who are mostly Jews, who are having this meeting. The aim of, and who want, of course, have a revolution all around the world so they can have their Jewish utopia, Jewish universal empire, etc., which is still the goal. The aim of the meeting was to clarify the concept of and give concrete effect to a Marxist cultural revolution. Amongst those present were George Lukacs, a Hungarian aristocrat, son of a banker, who had become a communist during World War I, a good Marxist theoretician. He developed the idea of revolution and eros, sexual instinct used as an instrument of destruction. And Willy Munzenberg, whose proposed solution was to organize the intellectuals and use them to make Western civilization stink. Only then, after they have corrupted all its values and made life impossible, can we impose the dictatorship of the proletariat, it was thought. It was, said Ralph de Toledano, the conservative author and co-founder of the National Review, a meeting perhaps more harmful to Western civilization than the Bolshevik Revolution itself. In the summer of 1924, after being attacked for his writings by the fifth Comintern, that's Communist International Congress, Lukacs moved to Germany, where he chaired the first meeting of a group of communist-oriented sociologists, a gathering that was to lead to the foundation of the Frankfurt School. Okay, this school, designed to put flesh on their revolutionary program, now this intellectual support for this cultural revolution, was started at the University of Frankfurt at the Institute für Sozialforschung. That's my lousy German accent. Never studied German. To begin with, school and institute were indistinguishable. In 1923, the institute was officially established and funded by Felix Weil, W-E-I-L. Karl Grunberg, the institute's director from 1923 to 1929, was an avowed Marxist, although the institute did not have any official party affiliations. But in 1930, Max Horkheimer, see, we got lots of names here, assumed control, and he believed that Marxist theory should be the basis of the institute's research. When Hitler came to power, the institute was closed, and its members, by various routes, fled to the United States and migrated to major U.S. universities, Columbia, Princeton, Brandeis, and California at Berkeley. Okay, thus the seed pod breaks, and the United States and Britain, to a large extent, are contaminated by these ideas. The school included among its members the 1960s guru of the New Left, Herbert Marcuse, denounced by Pope Paul VI for his theory of liberation, which, quote, opens the way for license cloaked as liberty. Max Horkheimer, Theodore Adorno, the guy who is supposed to have written much of the music that the Beatles put out, according to Dr. John Coleman, ex-MI6 and PhD political science, wrote the book Tavistock Institute. The popular writer Eric Fromm, the psychologist, who I read as, you know, as a young guy, Leo Löwenthal and Jürgen Habermas, possibly the school's most influential representative. These guys get so much press that, of course, they are rather famous figures. Basically, the Frankfurt School believed that as long as an individual had the belief, or even the hope of belief, that his divine gift of reason could solve the problems facing society, then that society would never reach the state of hopelessness and alienation that they considered necessary to provoke socialist revolution. You want me to read that again, Andy? Basically, they're saying, is if there's anyone left in the society who believes they can use his reason to figure out what's going on, then the society is not corrupt and destroyed enough for them to have the revolution. So you and I, in fact, are still using our reason. So maybe that's why we're not completely destroyed.
It reminds me of that William Casey quote where he says, we will know our program of disinformation is complete when everything, that's everything, the American public believes is false.
Exactly. He's a Wall Street banker, lawyer type who works with and for these guys. So, yeah, that's an amazing quote. Their task, therefore, of the Frankfurt School was as swiftly as possible to undermine the Judeo-Christian legacy. To do this, they called for the most negative, destructive criticism possible of every sphere of life, which would be designed to destabilize society and bring down what they saw as, quote, the oppressive order. Now, of course, this reminds you of the work of Dr. Kevin MacDonald, right, who wrote The Culture of Critique. He's a professor at Cal State University, where I taught, and he's written three books on this topic. And, of course, The Culture of Critique, you know, all these English deconstructionists, you know, who deconstruct every sentence of every book until nothing means what it says anymore. All of this is to, you know, to render all our classics meaningless, really. And this is, you know, Derrida and Foucault and these famous guys that are actually being taught all over universities in English and philosophy departments, etc. Their policies, they hoped, would spread like a virus, continuing the work of the Western Marxists by other means, as one of their members noted. Now, here's where we get to the nub of it here, Andy. So I'm going to read out 7 or 11 points here. To further the advance of their quiet cultural revolution, but giving us no ideas about their plans for the future, the school recommended, among other things, one, the creation of racism offenses. You know, it's illegal to, you know, hate speech or whatever.
And when was when was this put together? What year are we talking about here?
Roughly. Well, this again, it was started in 23. It picked up speed during the 30s when these guys moved over to America and Britain.
So they're talking about racism offences right back then. And what do we see today? It's amazing. Sorry to jump in. You know I don't like to jump in, but when you said racism offences, I just thought, you know, it just goes to show how long this has been in the making. Please continue.
Right. That's the whole point. And please do break in because I think it makes it more interesting. Two, continual change to create confusion. Three, the teaching of sex and homosexuality to children. Four, the undermining of schools and teachers' authority. Five, huge immigration to destroy identity. Does that sound a little familiar?
All too familiar, doesn't it? I mean, it's amazing when you see documents like this, and it's just a blueprint from what's happening today throughout the world, or rather throughout white countries in the world. We don't have these problems in places like China and Japan because they don't allow the immigration in there to disrupt their society because they know that a single people are not going to have problems with racism or things like that because they're just going to be the one race. So this is a weapon that they've just used against the white nations. That's the way it seems to me anyway, Eric.
Right, absolutely. And of course, you know, again, the blueprint for the plan was laid down many decades ago, as it was in the protocols of the Elders of Zion and in the Communist Communist Manifesto and in, you know, the documents put forth by the Bavarian Illuminati in 1773 and 1776. So we get this sweep of history of a plan, a war plan against against all non-Jews, you know. So let me go on. Number six, the promotion of excessive drinking. Seven, emptying of churches. 8, an unreliable legal system with bias against victims of crime. Certainly we've seen that. 9, dependency on the state or state benefits. Now, you know, this course, now we're talking about welfare and things like that and all kinds of aspects of the welfare system. 10, control and dumbing down of media. Sound familiar? 11, encouraging the breakdown of the family. So again, we recycle these same destructive ideas amongst a small group of Jews who are, in this case, intellectuals, who are trying to figure out how can we undermine the culture of a society by infiltrating into it. Now, I have to throw something out here, Andy. When I was doing my investigations into the controllers and all that stuff, I saw the patterns and, you know, historical. And it seemed to me that it required some kind of an acronym to understand what was going on. So, you know, the Chosenites then, you know, they do this diaspora. They go to all countries of the world. And, of course, they try to undermine and then subvert and then eventually take over those countries. Because, well, you know, as Theodore Herzl said, who was the founder of the, you know, World Zionist Congress in 1897, he, you know, when asked if Israel is a nation, and that was 1897 before there was a nation of Israel, he said, well, if you define nation as a people united against a common enemy, then Israel is a nation. It was 1897. Well, of course, the Jews are even then united against a common enemy, which is all non-Jews, all Goyim. You know, so I put together this acronym. What they do is they go into these countries, they infiltrate all aspects of society. So the first letter is I. Second one is they then use these kinds of strategies because they operate as a group. Maybe think of a beehive where they're connected, you know, as a collective, and they're working together to enrich themselves and to destroy their, you know, competitors, which is their host nation. Okay, the second letter would be C for contaminate. I C, infiltrate, contaminate. Third process in the stage in the process, A, appropriate. Infiltrate, contaminate, appropriate. And then I'm afraid the last one starts with E, eliminate. So this is what how they destroy countries, how they destroy institutions, how they destroy cultures. It's not a very good acronym, I'm afraid. It's ICAE, IKEA. I just call it ICKE. ICAE, infiltrate, contaminate, appropriate, eliminate. I think it helps us to understand the process because you see these host nations are just going about their business thinking that this particular tribe of individuals is just a bunch of individuals. But no, they're operating as a collective. And, you know, time and again, as you point out in your book, Synagogue of Satan, I mean, they've been thrown out of 100 countries. You know, this tribe has been thrown out of 100 countries in the last 2,000 years.
And Eric, I always make the point that the only countries I'm aware that they've been thrown out of are white countries. And so that's why we are their sworn enemy. And we're the only ones that have been able to rise up against them and throw them out. And so now they've said, right, we don't need these people anymore because they're the only historical threat to us. And I'm pleased that you mentioned as well that they pretend to be a load of individuals, but they basically act collectively as a race. And they do that while they tell everyone else that race is just a social construct and we should be mixing with all these other races and accepting them. And as you said earlier on, you know, laws against racism and stuff like that, because if people had any form of racism, then they wouldn't destroy their own race, which is exactly what these Jews are proposing for the white people to do.
Right. And, you know, I've been around for a while. You've been around for a while. You know, in my youth, I was very, very, very heavily influenced by these people and these ideas. So that I think there was, you know, some self-hatred as, you know, against the white race, just kind of inherited from the cultural gestalt that I grew up in, you know, which would have been liberals, you know, intellectual liberals. So, yeah, they were very, very effective. And, of course, the 60s revolution, I was in college when this really came to fruition. And boy, you know, talk about scrambling the compass. I mean, it's like you take that needle and you just throw it as hard as you can, and you never know where it's going to, you know, wind up. I mean, everything was upside down in the 60s, as it is again now, intentionally so. as a way of subverting the culture. And of course, nobody knew at the time, you know, why this was happening or who was doing it. All we knew was that things were pretty bonkers, you know. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's only in retrospect, as an older guy, I don't feel old, Andy, but I guess in terms of years, I've got 68 of them now. I feel 68 years young. I've graduated from being a professor, and I'm ready to start my life, you know. But I do have a perspective now, which maybe young people would regard as somewhat of a historical perspective, you know, because I was there. You know?
How does it compare now? Because, of course, you know, you're a professor, you've got the title, you've got the respect of these students, you're teaching a defined subject, geography, been doing it for many, many years, you retire, and then you go on to do this. And, of course, there's always that saying, and I think it's somewhat unfair when they say those who can do, those who can't teach. But, of course, you know, since then you've been doing all sorts of stuff, writing art, I mean, volumes and volumes of work, all these different websites. You've got an interest in so many different subjects. How would you compare your life now, sorry to take you off topic, to what it was like as a professor? Do you find the work you do now more rewarding than the work you did as a professor? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, yes, I do find it more rewarding, and also, Andy, a lot more dangerous, because now I am, you know, I have the tools to do the research, and I have the credibility to make, you know, come to these conclusions and put these things out on my website. And believe me, the powers that be, they've been on to me for a long time, and they've been throwing big piles of, you know, manure in front of me for a long time, trying to subvert my career and my life, and now I'm gang stalked. Well, you know, we've talked about gang stalking. It's a very, very odious, hateful system, basically to neutralize and slow kill individuals, and then eventually, you know, take all their assets. So you know, it's of course that gives me the excuse now to study gang stalking, and which I've done extensively with my gang stalking mind control cults.com website. So, you know, I just keep use it all as fodder. I mean, this is the reality now. And so I'm isolated with this program. There's a lot of people, I'm sure, spreading, you know, untrue rumors about me, lies, you know, to get family, friends, and neighbors, you know, to shun me or whatever, you know. So, you know, the life of a TI is totally different. But I have continued as a researcher. I figure that if anything, this gives me more license to tell the truth, because now I really have nothing to lose. I think only the truth is going to help us out of the predicament we're in, where we have a society run by intelligence agencies for the international bankers, yes, who are Jewish. You know, they always we're in a matrix of lies, cover stories that these intelligence agencies put out to fool society. So this shadow government, you know, that we've talked about, the deep state, well, that's who it is. It's the international bankers, the Jews, and the CIA, and the intelligence agencies. And they run things, you know. So it's come out of the shadows, really. And so that's my, you know, that's my target, telling the truth and exposing the lies and the liars and the criminals. Because, you know, I mean, these people have names and phone numbers and addresses, and they're human beings. And if we were to restore the Constitution in this country, you know, let's look at Operation 911, as we did in the last two shows. I think we've made a lot of progress on, you know, explaining what happened on Operation 9/11, and the predominant role of Israel and the American Jews supporting it, who have high positions in this country. Yeah, a lot of people should be in jail. I mean, this is an ongoing crime and cover up, just like gang stalking is an ongoing crime and cover up. So what we need to do, I think, is restore the integrity of our institutions. We have laws on the books in America. If they were enforced against this criminal syndicate, which is what it is, a lot of, you know, we could fill the FEMA camps with those guys. Which probably would be the best thing in the world for America and the world.
Well, it'd be
that's a long digressive answer there.
Divine justice, because they built them for us, and it'd be funny if they end up going in them themselves.
Yeah, you know, I mean, people say, well, should we kill all the Jews? And I say, well, listen, I'm not God, you know, I'm not to decide that. But, you know, maybe I have some recommendations, you know, give them minimum wage jobs at Walmart, give them, you know, give them a sleeping bag and a cigarette lighter and ship them to Antarctica, let them have Antarctica. I don't know. I don't know what you do with them, you know, but... But, you know, Henry Ford did write The International Jew, the world's number one problem in 1920. It was the world's number one problem in 1920, and here we are almost 100 years later. And it is the world's number one problem today because, well, they control America. And obviously we've gone through the infiltration, contamination, and appropriation part of my little goofy acronym, America. The only one remaining is to eliminate America, and I think that they're working hard on that, you know, with the weather war, which is state terrorism, and all these false flag shootings, you know, like the one in Las Vegas. And we've had 1519 of these false flag terrorism shootings since in America since 2012, the Sandy Hook non-event hoax debacle. So, you know, we're living in a world of lies now. And of course, you Americans can't be sovereign, and you know, government's supposed to serve the people, but we've lost that because of we're living in this network of lies, and they're manipulating us through deception and fear with the terrorism and all the lies that we get from the mainstream media. So, but anyway, I think. You know, I think that's a long-winded answer to your question. I feel like I just have to go forward. It's a contest. It's a spiritual contest as much as anything, I think. I mean, we're dealing with the Satan's children who want to bring in the Antichrist kingdom and have worked on that for a long, long time because evidently as a group they made this deal. You know, the devil confronted Jesus in the desert and said, you know, bow down and worship me and I'll give you all the kingdoms of the earth. Jesus said no. Well, they said yes. And they want all the kingdoms of the earth, and they figure it's theirs by divine right because they are, you know, the chosen people. But chosen for what? Chosen to bring in this, you know, satanic kingdom. You know, and I'm sure from their point of view, you know, this is all, you know, justified, you know, that this all needs to be done because they, you know, century in, century out, decade in, decade out, generation in, generation out, they maintain their focus on achieving these objectives. And here we see it with these position papers back in the 20s and 30s and all this stuff coming together today, you know, coming to fruition. So, please jump in, Andy.
It's fine. I mean, essentially, I think that you've covered a lot of the cultural Marxism aspect there with those different points, because we can see exactly what's going on today. And that's why I like these historical documents so much, because when people want to say, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist, or you're a kook, or you're putting two and two together and coming up with nine. No, what we're saying is we're identifying documents from well-funded societies. And don't forget, folks, that the original Rothschild house was in Frankfurt as well, funnily enough, where they lived with the Schiff family, where Jacob Schiff was descended from, of course. Who went on to finance the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. And it's just so important to go back historically and say, you know, what's happening today is not an accident. The immigration's not an accident. The ramping up of, you know, making criminals out of, you know, people that have a divine right to live in this country. Now, if I went over to India, I wouldn't think that I should have more rights than a native Indian. But the Indians that come over to the UK do get more rights than the people in the UK. Because if you complain about any of their actions or the fact that their culture doesn't quite fit in with our own, etc., then all that then they can just say you're racist and you can get arrested for being racist. You can never say that they're racist. And you can see, for example, things in America. You had that Australian woman shot by that Somali cop in Minneapolis. A cop shot her, and she wasn't a criminal. She reported what she thought was a rape, and a cop leaned across the other cop in the car when she went over to speak to them and shot her. And he refuses to say anything about it. He's still, from what I've been told, on the beat. I've not seen any White Lives Matter protests about it. And she was an innocent woman, whereas these Black Lives Matter protests are always generally protesting about the death of some black suspect with a rap sheet as long as your arm, who was up to no good, refused to comply with the demands of a police officer or tried to take his gun or whatsoever, and then died. And suddenly we get all these protests, but you don't get protests for white people. The whole thing is so one-sided today. It's just shocking. And this is why it's so important that Eric and I talk about these issues, because we are absolutely under attack. And what is going to be left of our race if these Jews are allowed to continue unhindered at the breakneck speed that they're going at? They basically feel, well, we own the media, we own the banks. The media is the most important thing, because by owning the media, it doesn't matter who the president is. Because President Trump comes out and he says quite clearly that at the Charlottesville rally, there were two sides, and one was there lawfully and the other was there and they were causing trouble. And the media go into an absolute hissy fit. And then he comes back and says, all right, it was the white people were the bad people. Because he's forced to by the media. So if the media can just get away with this all the time, then you're not going to have any change. This is what we're seeing time and time again. And it's these people that own the media. It's terrible. Recently in the Las Vegas shooting, a CBS vice president, Jewish of course, said that these people didn't deserve any sympathy because they were Trump supporters, they were Republicans. So you deserve to die because you're... I mean, this is just criminal. And what's happening to her? If someone said that about... someone came out and said that about Dylann Roof in that church, oh, these people deserve to die because they were black. You know, whoever said that, they'd be fired from their... Well, this woman was fired from their job, but they'd be up on hate crimes charges, all sorts of stuff. But when the shoe's on the other foot, it never seems to happen. So, Eric, where do you want to go with that point?
Well, you know, I can just continue with a few more points that relate to this historical...
Yeah, go ahead,
Yeah, okay, so... Again, one of the main ideas of the Frankfurt School was to exploit Freud's idea. Of course, Freud was a Talmudic Jew, father of psychoanalysis, who was also in B'nai B'rith in New York, which is the Masonic lodge for Jews, a very powerful one in New York City. Freud's idea of pansexualism, the search for pleasure, the exploitation of the differences between the sexes, the overthrowing of traditional relationships between men and women, to further their aims, they would, now think of the Simpsons cartoons here, attack the authority of the father, deny the specific roles of father and mother, and wrest away from families their rights as primary educators of their children. Abolish differences in the education of boys and girls. Maybe even put them in the same bathrooms in North Carolina, for instance. Abolish all forms of male dominance, hence the presence of women in the armed forces. And hence, in my career, Andy, every single job that I ever considered applying for that was, say, in the newsletter put out by the Association of American Geographers, Jobs in Geography, we are an equal equal opportunity employer. Women and minorities are encouraged to apply. Okay, so what that meant, in effect, was all things being equal, the woman or the minority was going to get the job. So, you know, blatant discrimination by the state, by all the states, by the nation, against white guys. Anyway, that's my career. I did make it through anyway, but that was always in the background. Declare women to be an oppressed class and men as oppressors. So here we have the whole, you know, feminist movement being, you know, kind of cooked up by these guys decades before it came into effect, you know, with the... And then the CIA was very instrumental in getting it going by funding Gloria Steinem and Bella Azbug and all these feminists back in the 60s and whatnot, 50s and 60s. And this then became a part of the cultural revolution of the 60s in the United States. The sexual revolution, feminism, et cetera, all this was pre-planned by these Frankfurt guys. Okay, Munzenberg summed up the Frankfurt's long-term operation like this. We will make the West so corrupt that it stinks. Okay. Frankfurt School believed there were two types of revolution, political, which, of course, They tried it, the Bolshevik Revolution, and cultural, which is, of course, the cultural Marxism, cultural revolution, which we now often call political correctness. You can't say this, you can't say that. And believe me, I was at the university long enough to feel the whiplash there. Cultural revolution demolishes from within. Modern forms of subjection are marked by mildness. So this is smiley-faced despotism. They saw it as a long-term project and kept their sights clearly focused on the family, education, media, sex, and popular culture. So, do you have any response to that?
Well, it just covers so many aspects, doesn't it? I mean, you mentioned the feminist aspect there. You mentioned the Simpsons cartoon. That's so important because all these things are, oh, this is an American institution, you know? And I made a comment on a show recently that, I mean, I won't watch any modern-day television. I won't read any modern-day fiction books because it's all full of this stuff. I read some sort of adventure story when I was on a holiday 2 or 3 years ago. You know, it's one of those things where you have a little book exchange, and I just found it on there and looked interesting, so I started reading it. And of course, it was some group of people that they recover stolen works of art that are stolen to order by Russian mobsters and all this sort of stuff. And then you see the group of people, and there's a woman in there who's a martial arts expert, and then there's a Chinese guy who's a computer expert, and then there's a black guy who's an expert at something else. And it's just the whole thing is set up, you know what I mean? And this is why anything, if you turn on a television, even if you turn on the news now, you've got to have a black person, a white person, or an Asian person, or anything like that. It just, the whole thing stinks, and people have had enough of it. All they want to do, we don't hate black people or Chinese people, or, you know, that's just ludicrous. We're accused of hating these people because all we want to do is to protect our own society. I have no interest in going into China and living there and trying to impose my customs on those people. But unfortunately, the people that come in, I mean, in a lot of ways, you can't blame them because they're simply making hay while the sun shines. If you're living in a squalor in Africa and you're told, we'll ferry you over and you'll get benefits and you'll have electricity and hot water and, you know, you'll live for free. And they can live like kings in this country because they are used to such a poor standard of living that they're not going to be going out to restaurants all the time or things like that, just buying the basic food, which their benefits more than cover, means that they've got this great quality of life. And then all they do is that they have as many children as possible, when the white people who really don't get the benefits, I mean, obviously there are some that do, that will go out and have these children, but if you look at the actual statistics, you will see it's these immigrants and the Muslims that seem to procreate the most. And of course, the more children they have, then they're the next generation. And then you have whitey, a young white couple who have a child, and they both have to work because, you know, to pay for that. And then they might have another, but they stop there because they can't afford a house big enough to have to house any other children, or they can't afford to pay the keep of any more children. But if you're over on benefits and every child you have means you get more benefits, you just become like a breeding machine, which is exactly what these Jews want, because the more of the immigrants that they get, that they create, then the less, you know, obviously over time the demographics are going to completely shift, as we've seen in London, where they freely admit in the media that 60% of London is not white. And this can't be fair or right. This is England, and it should be made up of a vast majority English population. And when it starts to go that way, and all they seem to do is bring more and more and more and more immigrants in, it's so obvious that this is a war being waged against you by your own governments who are under the control of this Jewish clique. What are your thoughts on that, Eric?
Well, exactly. This is, of course, going on in America. You know, Dr. E. Michael Jones is a PhD in English, and he's a Catholic, and he's got a magazine called Culture Wars. He put out a 1,200-page book called The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit and Its Impact on History. And I've read it, and it's really brilliant. He really basically interprets, Western history as this war between, the Catholic Church and Judaism. But what got him going on that topic, on that research topic, was when he realized, and he didn't know this originally, when he started researching the immigration issue, and he realized that the Immigration Reform Act of 1964, which made it harder for European whites to get in and made it much easier for people of color from, third world countries to come into America. That was authored by Jews. And when he realized that was the kind of the pivot point for him, then he just went back and looked at the whole last 2,000 years and did, I think, an excellent job of understanding and explaining. So in other words, yes, this is warfare. This is a cultural warfare, and we often call it other names. But if I can just continue a little bit more with this kind of intellectual background, I think it helps. Let me just go on here with this article, if you don't mind. We're talking now about Kurt Lewin, the Jew who was not only with the Frankfurt School, but also with Tavistock Institute of Human Relations. It says, throughout his career in Germany at Tavistock and then in the United States, Kurt Lewin helped to implement these Frankfurt School goals in many, many institutions here, many major universities, as I said. The strategy he implemented was also known as cultural hegemony. Okay, we're going to get control of the culture. That was to be established incrementally by, quote, the long march of Marxist ideology through the institutions, as articulated and advocated by Jewish Italian communist Antonio Gramsci. Okay, Gramsci was a figure, again, of course, a Jew, who was in jail in Italy and came up with and wrote a book, talking about the long march of Marxist ideas through the cultural institutions as a strategy to destroy the cultures. We couldn't do it with this political revolution, which worked in Russia but didn't catch on. So now we're going to use cultural Marxism. In a book called Cultural Marxism, Linda Kimball wrote, separately, two Marxist theorists, Antonio Gramsci of Italy and George Lukács of Hungary, later of the Frankfurt School, concluded that the Christianized West was the obstacle standing in the way of a communist New World Order. Okay, that's the goal, communist New World Order. The West would have to be conquered first. Okay, so now I guess I'm kind of repeating myself, but Gramsci is another key figure here. And another key phrase is the long march through the cultural institutions and cultural hegemony. Gramsci posited that because Christianity had been dominant in the West for over 2,000 years, not only was it fused with Western civilization, but it had corrupted the workers' class. The West would have to be de-Christianized, said Gramsci, by means of a long march through the culture. Additionally, a new proletariat must be created. In his prison notebooks, he suggested that the new proletariat be comprised of many criminals, women, and racial minorities. Again, anything to take down the white authority figure. And, it was Herbert Marcuse who wrote a book which was very influential through the 60s. What's the name of that book? Come to me in a second. But basically it was saying that the white male is the oppressor. He's fascist. He's racist. What's it called? Herbert Marcuse. Well, I'll look it up in a second. But anyway, so this is all coming out of that Frankfurt School, again, which was transplanted from Germany into the United States and was so influential at our major universities. The new battleground, reasoned Gramsci, must become the culture, starting with the traditional family and completely engulfing churches, schools, media, entertainment, civic organizations, literature, science, and history. All of these things must be radically transformed and the social and cultural order gradually turned upside down with the new proletariat placed in power at the top. And that's criminals, women, and racial minorities. And so this is just what happened, in the communist revolution in China. All the aristocrats, all the people who are, kind of born into the wealthy, educated families, you send out to, slop the pigs. And we're going to bring in those uneducated farmers and whatever. We're going to put them in control. This was the Cultural Revolution, back in the 60s in China. And basically, they're advocating the same thing. Let's turn society upside down. Let's take the ignorant and the uneducated and give them power and authority, and we'll take the people who, you know, come from families that are well-educated, and we'll make it hard for them, and we'll put them on the outskirts. So this is what we've had. We've turned society upside down, and this is not accidental. This is all by design.
Yes, I just looked up the Herbert Marcuse book. I mean, I think what you're referring to is One Dimensional Man of 1964. Would that be the one?
No, let me see if I can jump into it. It has to do with...
there's another one called Eros and Civilization. That's from 1955.
I'm sure that was also very influential. But let's see if I can find another one. Evidently, these guys were busy guys, you know.
And he's Jewish, of course, as well.
Yeah, let's see here.
A Critique of Pure Tolerance. An Essay on Liberation. Counter-Revolution and Revolt.
Yeah, I'm going down through the same list and seeing a bunch of books. Reason and Revolution, Hegel and the Rise of Social Theory, The Aesthetic Dimension Toward a Critique of Marxist Aesthetics, One Dimensional Man, A Study on Authority. Now I think we're getting a little closer there. One Dimensional Man studies... No, maybe it'll just pop into my mind here, but yeah. It doesn't seem, maybe it was an essay he wrote rather than a book. But these guys were very busy influencing the universities and the intellectual thought in the realm of, you know, sociology and psychology and whatnot. So,
We were talking about the cultural Marxism aspect. Is there anything else on the list you want to read through? Just to let you know, we've got just about 10 minutes left.
Well, why don't we just open it up for general discussion then? I think what we've done is we've shown who the main figures are. We've traced it back essentially to World War I. We've shown that this basically Jewish movement to conquer the world and create this communist new world order with them in control, of course, goes back, you know, well before the communist revolution, of course, goes back, you know, to the first Zionist Congress, goes back to the Illuminati, Bavarian Illuminati plans of 1776 in which the Rothschild family teamed up with the, you know, Adam Weishaupt and probably the Sanhedrin, the 300 top elders of Zion. And all of these were then very, very influenced by the dominant kind of form of Judaism of the day, which was Frankism or the Judaism of the Satanists, Zabbatai Zevi and Jacob Frank, whose real name is something very Jewish sounding, I can't remember. But anyway, so we have this very, very, very satanic strain of Judaism, and of course it is basic Satanism because they worship the serpent. And they have a plan to take over the world for Satan, and this is, they believe they're the chosen ones to do this. And now we've seen how they've been doing it. We've seen how successful they have been. I guess it's time that, you know, we showed who these people are. We got names for them. And yes, they are influential. They are at the, you know, at the center of you know, education, university education. But that's because they are supported by the financial structure that that they also control. So they support each other. They support each other's ideas. They own the press. Now six Jewish corporations, Jewish-owned corporations, controls over 95% of the world's media. So, yeah, all the spin, all the and you saw in the statement there, they want to influence science. They want to influence history. They want to influence all aspects of the culture in order to destroy it. Well, that's war. These people have been waging war against the host nations, which have been very kind to allow them to live there and make money. But if we can say this is war, then we have to identify the individuals and treat them accordingly. In other words, wage war back. It must be reciprocal. I mean, there must be some kind of a justice going on. But it hasn't happened that way. It has happened through stealth, that they infiltrate the upper levels of all aspects of society, including the military intelligence. So they've been very clever about it. It's been very stealthy. But, you know, again, a little research, and like I say, I graduated from being a professor, and now I can research what I think is most important, and I think this is most important. Little research shows who's doing it and what their goal is. So I think there needs to be some pushback. There needs to be some serious pushback.
I agree, but the thing is, how is that done? I mean, you know, you have to still walk on eggshells with shows with these people, certainly in certain countries, because they come after you for any criticism. They're trying to pass now this international definition of anti-Semitism. It's already been adopted by the UK, and so now they'll be feverishly working on ways, you know, penalties that are imposed on people that basically claim that you know, Jews run the financial system or the media. And it's all listed out in the same way that they did the Holocaust laws, which they put together straight after, you know, it was around the time that the Leuchter report came out, you know. As soon as some scientists had gone into the camps and proved that the Prussian blue staining was only to be found on the walls of the delousing chambers for the inmates' clothing and not to be found in the walls of the alleged gas chambers, the shutters came down and laws were brought out, and if you question anything to do with the Holocaust or the 6 million figure, you go to jail for up to 5 years. And they're just trying to do that again now, because the cat's getting out of the bag with their control of, as I say, finance and media. And as you've educated the listeners today, it goes right back to this Frankfurt School, and they thought they could get all this through before people woke up, and now people are waking up and they're banning books and they're banning YouTubes and they're censoring Google searches. And so I think that it's a race against time to expose them. All we can really do is get the information out there, Eric, because I can't in conscience. I would not go out now fighting these people on the streets, because what good am I to my people in prison? But at the same time, and I wouldn't encourage any listeners to do that, I say to people, you know, think of your family and what have you, and what you may lose. It's a subject that makes people very, very angry, that they're basically being destroyed by their own governments under the control of this alien race. But what we need to do is just educate our family, educate our friends, get them to educate their friends. And so suddenly we all wake up, because if the white people woke up around the world, then they could stop this straight away. But that is the real issue, and that is what I see happening. So it's just really a case of doing what we're doing now, and other people getting out there doing shows, doing books, doing articles, and getting away from all the distractions like the NFL. And I think that these people are shooting themselves in the foot there as well, because so many white people, which are, it's a, you know, lots of white fans of the NFL, even though I understand it's over 68% of the players are black, and they're starting to burn their NFL merchandise and things like that because they're sick of it. And that's what we need. But we need these people then to substitute the time that they spent watching the NFL to be listening to shows like we're recording today, and reading stuff about why this assault against them is taking place. That's really all I can sort of think of, and that's why my faith helps me, because I know that in the end it will be down to divine intervention that is the only thing that can stop these people. That's my view. But at the same time, I'm quite happy to educate as many people as I can up to that point, so I cover every angle. We've got about 4 or 5 minutes left, so over to you, Eric, for anything that you'd like to say on the subject.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, I think, you know, to try to, you know, take up arms is not a good idea. We also should remember that, you know, historically speaking, the first law that Lenin put in place after the Bolshevik Revolution was declaring any anti-Semitic statements to be a crime punishable by death or you know, sent off to the gulags. Again, it's the same people with the same program. And this is a historical reality. It is, you know, the Club of Rome, which is, I'm sure, comprised of many of these people, you know, say the earth has a cancer and the cancer is man. Well, that's not right. Man is, you know, God's greatest creation. But the earth does have a cancer, and the cancer is this tribe, you know. And so we have to figure out intelligent ways of dealing with this. And perhaps you're right. Exposing it, educating people is probably the best way to go. Even that can be dangerous. But the truth, I think, is our best weapon. Information, the truth, talking to people, sharing these things, not with hate, but with the facts, I think is probably our best bet. So I think we're on the same page there, Andy. And I very much appreciate the opportunity to talk about these things because I think they inform our reality.
Yes, I think I'm pleased what you brought up about hate, because this is the real issue. It goes back to this international definition of anti-Semitism. What they're trying to do is they're just trying to define telling the truth about them as hate. And so then they can get people who tell the truth about them in an effort to do the right thing, as we're told to by Jesus Christ. They're trying to make us criminals. And this is the real issue. This is the real deal. This is why I see us as in a race as to getting the information out. And that's why I encourage people, download all these shows. You never know how long this is going to go on for before they ban it or they've taken down my book and, you know, first off Amazon, then off the publisher. Fortunately, it's out again through the Barnes Review, but In the Name of Yahweh isn't out. So that's now a discontinued book. And this is what's so important, because you don't know how long this information, I'm not just talking about my show, go on Eric's website, you don't know if Eric's website, if he's going to have problems, so download articles, save articles. It's so important because people think that this information's going to be around forever and they don't, you know, hear the alarm clock ringing and see that, they see these things happening but they think, oh, they'll never take everything down. Well, look at how brazen they are at the moment. They don't want this truth getting out there. And so they're in a race. We're in a race. What we need to do is to make sure that we stay one step ahead of them and we keep circulating this information. And the good listeners out there that do save this information, you know, you could be people that some of the only people on the planet, the custodians of the truth. By saving these files all over the place and then posting them on torrent sites and things like that, if the site goes down, that would be such a service to help our people out should the worst happen. But Eric, we are coming to the end of the show, so I'd like to hand over to you to give your closing statement, please.
Yeah, thanks so much, Andy. Very interesting discussion again. Yeah, I think the issue of hate is very important. I mean, both you and I are, you know, Christians, and you know, we're told not to hate. And I really don't feel hatred in my heart for these individuals, for individual Jews at all. But, when I look at the sweep of history and the program, you know, it's very alarming and needs to be studied, needs to be exposed. Henry Macau, Dr. Henry Macau, the Jew, who's a very, you know, very kind of a popular writer, has written several books. He said, believe me, the hate's all on the other side, you know. And this is the conclusion that Michael Hoffman came to in his book, Judaism Discovered. He says it's a religion based on hatred. So we're looking at a group that uses lies and fear and terror and hatred, in fact, the tools of the devil, to conquer. And we have to gird ourselves, I guess, with every possible defense, intellectually, spiritually, put on the armor of Christ to the extent that we can, to stand up into this spiritual battle we're in.
Absolutely, Eric. It was fantastic today. I really appreciate you as my guest. And I want to thank everyone for listening. I'll be back with you all soon. And bye for now.
You have been listening to the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show on TBR Radio, brought to you by the Barnes Review. Andrew's book, The Synagogue of Satan, is now available on his website, andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com, in an updated, expanded, and uncensored edition.